You know, it's interesting when you go through these things in life, you ask yourself why you're being put through this, the enduring of the pain and the constant questioning of when is this going to end? But I will tell you this, anytime you're through trauma, and we're talking about significant trauma here, and again, you can't put a measuring spoon on what kind of trauma and how significant it is in your life. But what's interesting is you'll find on the other side of it, yourself in situations where your trauma and you surviving it will help others.
Hey guys, check out the 2023 Street Cop Conference, April 23rd through the 28th, Gaylord Convention Center. It's going to be the event of the year. Keynote speakers include Rob O'Neill, the guy who killed Bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, the youngest living Medal of Honor recipient, Navy SEAL Jason Redmond, Fox News host Tommy Lahren, Marine Corps Special Forces and Leadership Coach Cody Alford, Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff David Clark, and Sheriff Mark Lamb. It's going to be one hell of an event. And on top of that, we have all of our instructors and additional instructors from other companies going to be at the event, giving you everything they know for you to have a successful career and get the results you want to get in the field as a police officer. On top of attending the event, you'll get face-to-face time with every instructor attending the event, and all the keynote speakers will spend time with you. We got special events all week, giveaways, nightlife. It's going to be really, really worth your time, energy, and effort. I promise you, you will not regret it for a second. To register for the conference, check out streetcop.com, click conference, and everything you need will be there on the homepage. If you are looking for a room, just click book a room. The block has been sold out at the Gaylord Opryland Convention Center, but there are many hotels nearby within a walking distance of the event. You don't want to miss out on this opportunity. We will see you there.
111, 110. You trying to be a street cop?
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder, and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and we have with us Aaron Cho. Again, 9/11 strong, the fucking man. We had a profound podcast last time. It was great. And you've made some progress in some of the things we ended with. And you get any feedback on the last podcast or just like nobody likes me?
No, it was good. I mean, you got a tremendous reach, not just with your podcast, but with your audience on social media. And so, yeah, I'd introduced my story and my testimony to a whole new audience, even though we're kind of in the same world. And I think I did the same for you. I mean, I've got the whole West Coast thing. You got the East Coast thing. And
I'm Biggie, you're Tupac.
Yeah.
Except we're friends.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we did the East Side, West Side Connect. And it brought me, introduced my story to a whole new audience and vice versa. And no, the feedback was great. I had people reach out directly to me and said they followed me. They were pointed towards me because of your podcast episode. And I had some people reach out to me saying that the testimony I gave and about my mom and my dad and all that stuff was really encouraging. And, you know, it was good because I had additional testimony to give on the last episode. The last time we talked, you said, you know, you're really encouraging me to explore seeking therapeutic services. And I was just always one of those guys that says I can fix it. I don't care what it is. You know, if it's a patch on the wall, I can fix it. But when it comes to myself, you know, I've been self-fixing, you know, if I'm putting air quotes up in the air, I'm self-fixing myself for years. And it finally came to a head with our last round of tragedies. And I said, what the hell, I'm going to talk to somebody for two things, to confirm, number one, am I crazy? And number two, let me just nip it in the bud now before things manifest itself in an unhealthy way later. And my therapist, Jennifer, I went to see a therapist, first of all, and I did two sessions, and she said she wasn't worried about me, that I don't exhibit the signs and symptoms that would make her worry, but it is healthy to talk to someone and get stuff off your chest. So yeah, I'd recommend that to everybody. I don't care if you're like fresh off of trauma or you've been suppressing trauma for years. It's nice to get it off your chest with a stranger, because the people that you know that are in your circle, when you tell them your stories and whatnot, their reactions are going to be kind of predictable. And if you can kind of anticipate that, then you've already given yourself the outcome that you already suspected. But when you talk to someone that talks to hundreds, if not thousands of people on a daily basis, and they give you something, they come at you with curveballs, it's kind of profound. It puts a new wrinkle in your brain, gives you a different approach. Yeah, it's been good. My particular therapist happens to be a Christian also, but she specializes in military, police, first responders. So she knows exactly what we're going through. So that helps. So if anybody listening is thinking about it, they're on the fence or on the brink of doing it, two things, do it. But if you can find one that specializes in people that do our job, it's even better.
You know, one thing I want to add on to that is when you go into these settings like this, it's nice to, when you compare to a professional versus our inner circle of trust and friends, people don't realize it, but they're coming out with judgment. Anytime you tell them something, something we fear judgment. What are people going to think? What are they going to know about me? And I'll give a small example of what I mean by that, but it's really nice to go into an environment where you are not being judged. You are not held to the judgment of somebody else, and they are displaying compassion and understanding. And, you know, if you are seeing a therapist or choosing a therapist, look for one that you know is not judging you and be able to discern whether or not you're getting advice or somebody who may be dealing with their own shit and spewing on you. But when I say about our friends and family, I mean, it's easy to say to somebody that you trust, oh, my significant other, my spouse. We'll just take that for an example. Oh, they talked to me like shit today. We had a fight over this. It was ridiculous. And then that person that you believe is in your circle of trust will say, oh, yeah, you can call me for any time or anything. But I told you he was an asshole. See, I told you, and I don't think you should be with him anymore. And that's not what we need happening to us. So we talk about, yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'm 41. My circle is nil. I would comfortably say I'm always open to having somebody new into my circle, but my real, real close inner circle may only consist of less than a handful of people. I can count, you know, like really, like I, like people that I really know that I can sit down, not people that, I know people love me, right? I'm saying, but my inner circle where I can sit down with somebody and say, we are going to go back and forth and exchange with no judgment and complete compassion. And you know what's crazy? One of those people, my friend Ryan Ust, who's a lieutenant here in New Jersey at a police department, not only is he my friend, but never, ever, ever cast judgment. And I never do the same to him. And we sit down and basically we're each other's therapists. And, you know, just there's that comfort level of things we can talk about because there is zero judgment. There never has been. And, you know, like last week he apologized to me about something. I'm like, Rye, you're supposed to. He's like, I know. So I'm just like, when we get on the phone, I dump things on you and I get frustrated. I'm like, bro, that's what I'm supposed to do. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I do it to you too. So please encourage, you know, when you find that one person, but make sure they're not casting judgment. That's why you can't say things to your mother and father. You know what I mean? Like, they're probably just because they love you doesn't mean they're the right person to talk to. And that's a very good point, Aram.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. You know, my circle, it's smaller now because a member of my circle passed away in October. But he was one of my five best friends that I had since I was 15 years old that are still my best friends today. Yeah, we were in each other's weddings. We're there for our kids' births. And that's it's awesome. It's very rare. We all bonded over football in high school. And, you know, we went to the academy together. We all became cops together. And it's just, it's uncanny. I mean, you, at some point you would think, right, we'd split off and go in our different worlds, but no, even if we go weeks without talking to each other, cause life happens, we pick up right where we left off. And, you know, I'll be 46 in a couple months. And, to say that I've had my same best friends that I've had since I was 15, it sure is a blessing. And, you know, I mentioned that we lost one of them in October. That really rocked my world because he was kind of the rock in our group in high school. He was our one friend that was heavy handed and was kind of the enforcer. So if we ever got into scuffles or anything, you know, you'd want him there to be right there next to you. And he was just kind of always that tough as nails guys, and people loved him. He was a guy's guy, and there's no wonder he was elevated to chief at our department. He was groomed through the ranks and was our chief. And he was like my mentor at work too. So I was blessed to have that. We had breakfast every morning together for the last 7 years. And I really missed that. And that still kind of triggered, you know, a real shift in what was going on. Cause even when my mom died or when my dad died, I didn't see them every day. They were an impactful part of my life, an important part of my life, but they weren't part of my daily routine. And so when you pluck that something out of your daily routine like that, someone you have access to every day that you have this expectation and they're gone, I think that really started making the dominoes fall and pieces started falling apart. And that's where I really needed to do some self-reflection and figure out how to move on. Cause it was different. The routine was different, you know, with my mom and dad, it's like, yeah, okay, well, you know, you kind of always expected them at a certain age that their health was going to decline or whatever, but you know, their life, for those that didn't listen to that episode, you know, my dad committed suicide, my mom was murdered. And, you know, there's a part of me that felt cheated, but at the same time I made peace with it. Life happened. But everything compounded together in a small span of time just kind of sucked.
You know, it's interesting when you go through these things in life, you ask yourself why you're being put through this, the enduring of the pain and the constant questioning of when is this going to end? But I will tell you this, anytime you're through trauma, and we're talking about significant trauma here, and again, you can't put a measuring spoon on what kind of trauma and how significant it is in your life. But what's interesting is you'll find on the other side of it, yourself in situations where your trauma and you surviving it will help others. Even this week, twice, I was able to take things that have happened to me and say to two different people who were experiencing it, I understand. There's no judgment. I know exactly what you're going through. I don't have to even guess. I know how you feel. And you can always speak with me and hear some advice. And I want to let you know it's going to be okay. And it may not sound like it's going to be okay, but look at me. Like I'm doing it, you know, and I had to tell myself that over and over again for a long period of time, one foot in front of the other, right? You're going to be okay. And we just get that, I don't want to call it battle hardened, but we kind of do get battle hardened where you say to yourself, I've been like, you know, you ever see, let's take that example. We've seen that video and I've talked about it on the podcast before where there's a shooting in the middle of the street, the dude pulls up, he's got a cup of coffee in his windshield. We might have talked about it on the last podcast, you and I. Gets out, charges his M4, lines it up on the trunk of his Ford Explorer, takes one shot, hits the guy like 136 yards, drops him like a sack of potatoes. Well, I had a class in San Diego this previous week, and a guy in the class knows that dude and said he was special forces.
Yeah.
I go, if you all think you're going to pull that shit off, you're not. And I said, I've been saying this since that video came out. I don't know the guy. That guy has to have combat experience to be that fucking calm in a situation like that. And you hear that from these combat veterans of, you know, the first one's insane. But then we have Rob O'Neill speaking at our conference. You ever listen to Rob's interviews? He's like, we were all calm going to that compound, knowing we were all coming home, anticipating our death. So when you've been through shit and you've survived through it, not only can you know what the next round's going to be like and that you're going to be okay, but you could also tell people, hey, man, it's going to be, you're going to be okay. Like, I promise you. Yeah, it's going to suck. It's going to be fucking brutal. All right? It's going to be hard. But just remember, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And I'm the person who found that light. And it's going to be, you're going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. You're healthy. You have beautiful people in your life. Start seeing a little differently. Keep telling yourself that. Stop focusing on the negative. Start focusing on the positive, what things are good in your life. And if you lose your job as a cop, you know, but it's a blessing. I had a friend of mine who got significantly injured. And I said something to him and somebody said, well, how is so-and-so doing? I said, so-and-so, and I won't say his name, is wise enough to know that he might've gotten shot in the face 2 weeks later, but maybe that was God's intervention to keep him off the road by creating this off-duty injury. And, you know, he like looked at me, I'm like, and you know, you don't have terminal disease, right? It's just it's a significant thing in your life, but you're going to be okay. And he looked at me, he was like, yeah, you know what? I do know that. I didn't think he knew that at that point, but I spoke on his behalf to somebody else. I knew that as soon as he heard that, he would have adopted that thought belief. And so I think at that moment, it really clicked for him. Like, hey man, right? It sucks. I get it. It's a permanent injury. It's a significant one, but you don't have terminal disease. You're going to live a life. And maybe 2 weeks from now, you would have been shot in the head. And when you die and go meet the good Lord, he says, sorry about that, but you were going to die in the line of duty if I didn't do that. And I had no options. So when people lose their jobs in law enforcement, you know, oh my God, what do I do now? It's the only thing I know. Da 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 da. And maybe you lost it for a crappy reason, for something that's very invalid because they didn't like you because for whatever reason. But, you know, start to see the other side of things. Oh, wow, this gives me an opportunity now to go do something else. What an exciting time. maybe this wasn't what I was meant to do. Maybe there's more for me in this life. So people have to really start trying to shift their perspective away from woe is me to what does this mean now? You know, you're going through a divorce. Maybe you say to yourself, this is terrible. I've lost everything. She's leaving. He's leaving, whatever it may be. But maybe it's, well, maybe I'll, it's a new opportunity to meet somebody else. I wonder if I can love again. I wonder if I can go and go through this again. Maybe the next person will be even more wonderful than the last. And maybe the next person needs me and what I'm good about and what I can give to somebody. And I was the blessing to them and they were the blessing to me. So there's all these things you got to, and that's how you live through life, man. Cause you sit and you fucking dwell on the negativity. You're going to find yourself.
You can't, I mean, you got to give it to God. You know, everything that happens in this life is already predestined. You think you make plans and you think you got this great plan and God just laughs at it, right? It's not our plan. We're just living the script that's been written for you if you're a believer. And the thing about it is this, if you're a believer, which I am, and it sounds like you are, Dennis, everything that happens to us, good and bad, is God filtered, right? Meaning there's a blessing at the end of this, and it's a blessing for two reasons. There's some obvious blessings where you receive, you know, like good news, or you got some tangible blessings. And then there's those negative blessings that you can't see. I don't know if I told you this story, but you know, when my mom was murdered in 2015, that was January 2015. We were in the middle of escrow on this house that I'm in, and we're in a house that was in a neighborhood way in over our heads, but we moved 50 miles away so we can, from our other house, so we can move here. Cause I wanted my kids to have this expansive backyard. I wanted them to just be able to go out and go out and ride their quads and their dirt bikes out in the desert. And we got into a really fancy neighborhood because this house needed some work. And our plan between my wife and I, our first house was a 1922 Craftsman bungalow that needed a lot of work. So I learned how to be a plumber, electrician, you know, patch walls. So I figured it all out. So we said, hey, this is a modern house. We're going to be able to do it. And then my mom dies, right? And I'm like, now we're way in over our head. Well, unbeknownst to me, my mom had some life insurance, and she left me some money. And we were able to, instead of doing things little by little over an 8-10 year period, we were able to fix things up. Put in a bitchin' backyard, nice pool, rock slide, and give our kids a nice backyard to grow up in and have a house that they can remember after they're all adults. They can remember their childhood as having a fond home. And that was one of the blessings that, you know, my mom left me from the grave. But that's one of the positive, tangible blessings. But one of the things that you don't see that can happen is 6 months later, I'm sitting on an oral board interviewing for sergeant. And the way my department does it is there's three, I was testing for sergeants, so it's three lieutenants. And usually they bring lieutenants from the outside, from neighboring agencies, right? At least from the same county. And I work in LA County. Well, I walk in, I see one from an agency two cities away, another one from an agency two cities away. And the lieutenant that was closest to the door when I walk in is from Oceanside. And that's in San Diego County. And that's where my mom lived when she was murdered. I noticed the name right away. I'm like, we've never had anybody come out this far. We've never had anybody come out this far since. And I go through the interview. I think I'm doing pretty good. It's over. I go to shake everybody's hands and thank them. And he stands up and shakes my hand and says, Aaron, I know about your mom. And I want to express my condolences. And I thanked him. I said, hey, what happened was awful, but your agency stepped up and really took care of me. And I appreciate it. And I'm sure that caused some discussion after I left. The other two lieutenants were probably like, what was that all about? He probably told them my story. And I don't know what the score was before that, but I guarantee you whatever the score was after was elevated a little bit, maybe sympathy points, but I'll take them. And I promoted off that list to sergeant. And the fact is this, that whether it's good things or bad things that happen to you, they're always God filtered. There's going to be blessings. You may not know what it is. It's not for us to understand because the way God does things is so complicated. It's way beyond human understanding. But that's how I've gotten through some of the stuff I've been through. I just had to put my faith in God and trust that things happen for a reason.
I want to go back to what we just talked about, but I want to ask you something that I just picked up on. It's interesting that you talked about your mom, and even though her demise was probably one of the most unfortunate stories in the history of mankind. It's a horrible, horrible story. And unfortunately, what's done can't be undone. But do you see signs from your mom from time to time? Do you believe that she's still with you?
I don't know. I mean, I got some weird stuff to tell you. The whole testing process, I mean, that felt like a sign. We've never had anybody from San Diego County come up to our department for any kind of testing evolution. That was the first and only time that's ever happened. I mean, if that's not my mom reaching out or giving Jesus a little nudge on the elbow saying, hey, hook up my son. This is his third time trying. And on top of that, we had an outside, that was our first time in the 100-year history of our department that we've ever brought in an outside chief. That was at chief's, he's been there for 6 months when this testing evolution comes around, and he brings in a whole new testing process. I mean, it was successful for me. And I got to think that my mom took part in that because, yeah, I don't believe in coincidence. I believe in providence. And if you read the Bible, it talks about providence, that there are no coincidences. You're just following the script that's been pre-written for you. And, you know, if this was a movie script, I mean, it would be unbelievable. Just the tragedy I went through and then the victory at the end and the process in which that happened. I mean, it's uncanny. We've never had somebody from San Diego County, Orange County for that matter, and that's just the neighboring county over, come in. It's always been an LA County agency that, and someone from our vicinity that sat in and did our processes. So, but, you know, I'm not a believer in speaking to mediums or anything like that. And shortly after my best friend died, one of my old high school friends reached out to me through a mutual friend and said that she was like a medium her whole life, and she has these powers to talk to people in the dead and whatever. And she said she had a message to me from Ben. And I said, hey, I don't want to hear it. The Bible specifically talks about not talking to mediums and stuff like that and not to enter that world. And if the Bible talks about it, that means it is true. There are people on this earth that have that power and ability to do it, just like the Bible talks about Satan. Satan's on this earth, and that's why bad things happen. I can go down a rabbit hole and preach on this all day long, but as much as I wanted to hear this message from Ben, I was like, no, I can't do this. The Bible says not to do it, so I'm not going to do it. And I've had several friends come up to me who knew this mutual friend that said, hey, there's this message. I think you need to hear it. I'm like, no, I'm good. I don't want to hear it. And I was up for two nights in a row having anxiety over this, conflicted, because I'm like, what if this is a message I need to hear? But you know what? I got to go back to what I was saying is I got to trust the plan. No matter what I hear, that's not going to make a difference. Whatever course I veer, it's already been pre-written. God already knows what I'm going to do. So, and that's how I've survived on this planet. That's why I'm able to go to bed after all the horrific things I've seen and experienced in my life. I can go to bed and not stay up and have anxiety because I just give it to God. I put it in God's hands. There's nothing I'm going to be able to do that's going to change what's going to happen tomorrow, if there is a tomorrow. So I live life like tomorrow is not guaranteed. I look forward to tomorrow, absolutely. But I live like life as if tomorrow is not guaranteed. I live for today. And, you know, some people say that might be reckless and irresponsible, but, you know, my wife and kids seem happy, and the people that see us from the outside looking in, I think they think we're a model family, and that's all I care about at this point.
So what was the message?
Don't know. I don't care. Don't know. I mean,
well, you do care. You just don't want to find out because you're trying to stick to your guns.
Well, I'm convincing myself I don't care, and I've got to block it out.
I mean, let's think about this. I'll play devil's advocate for a second here, and I'm not trying to be counter-religious. When you say that we are similar, yes, I'm a very spiritual person. I don't follow one path. For me, and I'm just sharing it, I'm not trying to lock horns, and I don't go down. I never talk politics or religion ever in my life. I'll just tell you how I live my life. I live my life in the sense that I'm trying to do the best that I can for other human beings. That's really, if you actually analyze my life and look at what I do, even my personal life, I am just somebody who, when the good Lord says to me, what have you done for anybody else besides yourself? I'm going to say, let the work speak for itself, sir. And if this is what you wanted for me to come through these gates, I have to be confident enough to say that I think I've done as much as I could with what you gave me, and I appreciate it. You know, and I respect everybody's religion, however they want to see it. For me, I'm just a spiritual person, and I believe in, you know, the laws of attraction and the laws of karma. And I know that the more you give, the more you get, but I don't give to get. It's just how the fucking world works. I can't explain it. And the crazy thing is, and this may sound fucking nuts to say this stuff, just like anything else you say when you say something profound and insane, not that it happens very often, but I actually get visited in my sleep, and I've delivered messages. Not often. Like I said, dude, it happens like sporadically, months and months and months. And I'll call people. Actually just happened not too long ago, but I'll call people and say, hey, this may sound strange. And dude, people will say to me like, how the fuck did you know that? I'm like, I don't. I'm telling you, I had this dream. I was asked to deliver this message. It may sound nuts. Please still follow me, everybody. It may sound crazy. Typically, it's people I know, obviously, and family members and shit like that. And I have stories, dude. I can't make it up. My cousin who's down the hall here went to see a medium after my uncle, her father, passed away. And dude, what this medium told her was insane. There is no way on earth she could have known what she told. She wasn't supposed to record it. She recorded it. It was a 30-minute session. And what this lady was talking about, I'm like, how? You could have never known this stuff. Then I also, for me, I watch like YouTube videos and like Beyond and Back, things like that. I like to watch that stuff. And dude, it's just amazing that it all seems to come together. Actually, my friend Rob Dukansky's coming in this afternoon to the podcast. He's the most successful realtor in the state of New Jersey. I want to say, he'll give his stats this afternoon, so I don't misquote him, but I think he's the number one realtor for REMAX in the country. The dude's a savage. He's a real good friend of mine. He had some significant loss in his life. And at the time, I think he was a big disbeliever. And he was very frustrated, very angry. It was really, really bad. It's some real bad things happened in his family. And last time we hung out, I was like, you know, what do you think about that? He's like, oh, it's real. He's like, it's fucking, you can't make this shit up, dude. The things that have been happening to me since that happened, it's fucking nuts. He's like, there is no explanation of how these things could have happened. It's not coincidence. You know, these people who I lost are very much in my life, and they remind me anytime I have a disbelief. He's like, and it's not that I'm just looking for coincidence and sign, because actually you can dispel and disprove coincidences. He's like, explain that to me. I'm like, you can't, dude. You can't explain it. And there's just a lot of evidence that reminds me why I have to behave appropriately and why there's something bigger than us outside of this thing. It's like, you don't have to believe me. Just go on YouTube and put in, you know, out of body experiences, beyond and back, all this shit. Watch those things for you're going to cry. Watch those things for 2 or 3 hours if you're having a hard time believing this stuff. And you tell me, how do these people who don't know each other all over the world come back and say the same exact shit about the same exact things? It's just nobody can make this stuff up. How do they know these things?
No, like I said, the Bible talks about it, so it's real, right? You know, people are like, how do you believe in a God when all these non-believers tell me, how do you believe in God when all these bad things? How can this God that's so loving and cares for the world allow these things to happen? And people forget, because Satan's also in this world, and we're in a period right now where Jesus left the earth, and even when Jesus was on the earth physically, in a physical presence, bad things were occurring. Once the humans were compromised in that Garden of Eden, when Adam and Eve took the fruit of good and knowledge, it opened up the door. We all have sin nature now. Every one of us that's born, babies are innocent. Well, we're born with sin nature. It's part of our human instinct that's embedded in us now. And with all those things, people forget Satan walks this earth. I mean, and Satan influences people, and Satan influences Christians. And the closer you are to God, the closer Satan wants to get to you. So I'm not trying to turn this into a religious or spiritual episode, but I just want to qualify that because I do believe that there are mediums out there, people that connect to spirits that are all around us, and the Bible does talk about this. I'm also disciplined in my faith enough to know that I've got to adhere to some of the rules that I know of. And you talk about the works that you've done. This is all the good I've done. And works are great. The Bible actually talks about, you know, the path to heaven is through me, is through faith. However, faith without works is dead. So they go hand in hand. You can't just say I earned my right to heaven because I did so many good things in the world. But you also have to believe. And part of the belief is having the discipline to know, hey, I can't cross this road because this is where my faith tells me this is where I need to stand. So, I wouldn't say I'm a tremendously disciplined guy because my diet doesn't reflect it. My workout routine doesn't reflect it. And other aspects of my life doesn't reflect it. But I do know that I'm this big when it compares to messing with God's rules. So I try to stay in my lane when it comes to that stuff.
Hey guys, if you're enjoying the Street Cop podcast, do us a favor and go give us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. Tell a friend. We don't charge anything for the episodes. We appreciate your support. Check us out on any social platform by putting into the search bar Street Cop Training. Give us a follow. We have a lot of free content coming out every single day that you might not catch here on the podcast. And it's important for you to be able to do your job more professionally, and we also entertain you as well.
I think, God's rules, whatever you want to call them, a moral aptitude, your ethics, all that stuff is a good way to live your life. And every so often you get to look at the work that you've done. And I think in the sense of when I say work that you've done, just probably can measure it from how people regard you. You know what I mean? Like how, when I say work, I mean, just how you're living life as a better human being. When asked about you, what do people say about who you are? So for me, especially in the business space, let's take that for example. I know that you're never going to dig up shit that I was a scumbag ever, right? Like in the business world, as a cop, as a, you would never hear a thing about me being a blue fucking Falcon ever. You'll actually hear quite the opposite. You'll hear like, that's the fucking guy you want with you, bro. Like that's the fucking dude. You trust that motherfucker as far as you can throw him. Like I'm the guy, right? That's just how I feel. That's how I was raised. That's how I saw the profession. I'm not saying I cover it up for crime. I'm saying you could feel comfortable knowing that I'm there and I would never judge any mistake that was made. And it's not my business to make judgment calls. And in business, you're never going to hear a conversation of where we put us before you as a client, as an employee. It was never like, what can I get first? Then you guys get the fucking crumbs later. We always try to do the right thing. And if there's ever a perception that we didn't, it wasn't intentional. It was a human mistake. So I always say, man, I lead with my heart. I try to do everything I do with my heart. I try to make the best decisions, even if it's to my detriment at the short-term, gain. I forego that because I know in the macro, in the grand picture of things, this meant more at this time than what it meant to me. Let's shift focus a little bit. I want to go back to where we talked about these traumatic incidents happening. But all I heard over and over again is a lot of these things were a blessing in disguise. And I tell people this all the time. Who am I to speak to people when they're going through something really fucked up, right? But I think now I've qualified myself enough where people really embody the trust that I portray. And I try to take a moment to be a little different than everybody else. And like many, many times in my life where I showed up to somebody's trauma, post-trauma, and tried to offer comfort. I think my comfort was different than other people. I think my comfort was maybe some stoicism, some calming through intelligence and guidance. And one thing that I wrote down, it's not my story, but I remember hearing this. There's a famous speaker by the name of Les Brown. I don't know if you've ever heard of him before. Les Brown's great. I mean, he's an older man now, but his stuff in the 80s and the early 90s, this was one of the most profound speakers when it talked about reaching full potential, business coaches. I mean, the guy was really good. And he tells a story in one of, he goes fast too. It's really good. Anybody should listen to Les Brown. They should knock out an hour of Les Brown. It may change your life. He's very good. He's a very warm, his story's excellent. But he tells a story about him complaining to his ex-wife. And he's very funny when he tells a story. He goes, yeah, I was complaining to my ex-wife about my boss. So much so I hated him so much that I quit and I became this successful person. And the wife said something along the lines of, well, if you hate him so much, why do you work for him? And that was the dynamic that made him leave and go do his own thing. So he said, in some sense, we are frustrated with our circumstances that we have a bad boss and they're such assholes. But if they had treated you nice, you wouldn't have been in the situation that you're in now, which might be a better one. So I always tell people, look, when you're going through something, you've got to try to find out what the blessing in disguise is going to be. But if you can't figure it out, just be patient because it's going to show up, man.
Yeah.
You know, Like all the times a boss treated me like a fucking asshole for no reason because they had no emotional control, zero intelligence, and acted like a fuckhead. That has made me the boss that I am today, or at least I strive to be. It made me try to understand, help portray and lead others of this is what bosses look like, good bosses, right? I didn't read the book on it, but I've seen the bad ones. I wasn't thrilled with my childhood, right? But I've also said this to my wife. I go, you know, she had a fucking fucked up childhood too, right? And I'll say to her goddamn parents' face, they were fucked up. And we've had this conversation and I go, you know, you're probably one of those impressive mothers I've ever seen in my life. She's like fucking Mary Poppins. It's amazing. She's like the almost like a saint of children. My wife is really good with kids. And I said, you know, our kids have a phenomenal life. They have wonderful parents and we are patient and calm. And I've learned so much from you. I go, but that comes from our experiences of what it was like to not have that. Right. So, and you could argue on the other side, well, I knew what it was like, so I act like that. Yeah, I don't know. But for us, her and I, it was so bad for us growing up because our parents were so fucked up that we would never want our kids to experience that. And that has made us great parents. So it's weird that like, you're like, why is this happening to me? I grew up in a crazy chaotic household. I have a very significantly disabled older brother, but it's a nutty ride. It's still nutty. Shit hit the fan in my house every day, all day long, nonstop, all day long. It was fucking chaos. Even into my professional career as a police officer in the town that I worked in, it didn't end there. The cops were still going to my house, you know, because it was such a chaotic place. It wasn't like they were like smoking crack and just crazy motherfuckers living in a house. And I just happened to be stuck in the middle of it. And, you know, you're like, man, why did my childhood have to be like that? But dude, shit hits the fan here at Street Cop Training all the time. Like, that's just business. And people often say to me like, hey, man, how are you so calm during this? I'm like, I had to be calm my whole life. I lived in chaos. So I give these examples. And I'm an open book and transparent to show people like, yeah, man, all these fucking things that happened to you, right? You could look at it as the worst goddamn thing that you could ever imagine bestowed on somebody. Or you could look at it as, okay, it's made me better. It's formed me for who I am. It happened for me, not to me. And I'm able to take these experiences and lead other people and guide other people.
Yeah. I mean, you can look at it two ways. You can have a totally different perspective if you view yourself as a victim, right? A victim mentality says, well, I'm a victim of my circumstance. That's giving me the excuse to be an asshole. I'm an asshole to you because I was raised surrounded by assholes. That's the victim mentality. I don't think people that are considered type A or alphas have that mentality. They find reasons to overcome adversity. And another way you can describe adversity is those challenging moments. And you had those challenging moments growing up. And I've always said this to people when they experience challenging moments, you just had a character building moment because character is developed through adversity in those challenging moments. You cannot have tremendous character without experiencing some sort of adversity or challenges. That's why some of the most polarizing people that you see on the internet today are people that have been in war. They were, even if they were Navy SEALs and never deployed into a major conflict, they were deployed in these micro conflicts and missions, but they went through it in these character developing boot camps or like bud school. And some of these people have this spark and, you know, this disconnect that takes them back to their childhood. They may have had a crappy childhood and that may be the motivation they need to get through these challenging evolutions. And I can identify pretty quickly the difference between people that grew up having challenging moments that have the victim mentality between the people that grew up having challenging moments that have the overcoming mentality. And those are the people I kind of surround myself with. I mean, I think that's why you and I got along so well right off the bat. I don't know if I had a childhood nearly as bad as yours, but my dad was a meth addict, a coke addict in the 80s. And, you know, I witnessed domestic violence throughout pretty much my whole life. But back then, I mean, Vine didn't exist. There was no DV laws. It was just, you know, just how it was growing up in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. But you would think it'd be the opposite. My dad was in the Army. I was born on an Army base. Both his brothers were in the Army. My grandfather was in the Army. You would think we'd have more of a tremendous set of discipline and regimented life, but it wasn't the fact. As soon as he disconnected from the Army and we started living our civilian lives, it wasn't so great. But what I did have, I think, was a good example of my mom. you talk about leadership examples. I had two. I had my dad and my mom. I had my dad, who wasn't a great leader. They both had their own small businesses. Through my dad, I witnessed what it was like to treat your people as if they were just another number, as if they were replaceable, dispensable. And my mom, who treated her employees as if they were family, because she cared enough about the people that cared enough to make her business a success because it took care of her family, that she cared about them too. And she said, you know, I don't view employees as revolving doors. The people that I have are the people that I chose, and I want them to stay. So when it came to lunchtime, like lunch break, when I'd spend the summer at my mom's business, we ate family style. She would bring lunch, and I don't care if it was a McDonald's or she'd cater a restaurant meal. The people didn't leave the shop for lunch. They stayed and we all ate together. And that was a time people can talk about their family, their personal issues. And my mom was there. And there would be times where my mom would deliver surprise checks to these people just because she knew that they were going through some difficult times, and she would pay their bills. And so I think I'm somewhere in between. I don't think I'm my mom. My mom was a saint. No one's going to be like my mom. And my dad wasn't perfect. He made mistakes. I'm that guy. I still make mistakes to this day. I haven't figured it all out, but my intention is to be more like my mom. That's where my heart is. That's where my natural instinct is to be empathetic and nurturing. And I want to be there to help. And I'm trying to find that. That's something I struggle with, is like, if you came to me, if you openly expressed a problem, if you didn't tell me I want advice, I probably wouldn't say, hey, here's my advice. And some people would say, good, because I didn't ask for it. But at the same time, every part of me wants to be there and go, oh no, I want to tell you some advice. But at the same time, I kind of had this wall where I'm like, you know, he didn't ask me for it. I'm not going to volunteer it. So I'm trying to figure out which way to go. Cause I feel like I've got a lot of advice to impart because I've been through it. But at the same time, I'm also that guy that doesn't want to, impose myself on somebody. So still a journey. I'm still learning. And hopefully I'll find that sweet spot to where I can approach someone without imposing and give them some valuable advice.
I think that there isn't an imposition when the intention is pure. I will tell you two quick stories. The first one is a girl I was friends with on Facebook that I went to middle school with. I haven't seen her in forever. Somebody had died that she loved, and she put it on Facebook, as we all do, just at a very minimum to let people know that this person has passed away. And, you know, most of the time I'd like to believe it's not for attention and pity and empathy. I think it's just to be aware that somebody's not with us anymore and that their family's going through pain, which is perfectly fine. And it's part of the grieving process. And she wrote a post and it said, "None of you understand what I'm going through. All these I'm sorry's don't mean shit." And I hadn't talked to her in probably 20 years. And I DM'd her and said, "Hey, everybody understands what you're going through. Everybody's gone through it. Those I'm sorry's, they're genuine. I know you're in pain, but don't see them for what they're not. This is not just, they took time, energy, and effort to at least stop. And there's 328 comments. You have 10,000 friends. Now, you might not be coming up on their algorithm, which is fine, but I promise you there's more people that scrolled past it than the ones who stopped and actually wrote a comment. So although you might see it as they don't understand, you're right. They don't understand you right now at this moment, but they all have expressed sympathy to you as other human beings. So see it that way." And she actually wrote back like, "Thank you. I'm just going through a lot of go. And I understand that, but I just want you to be clear. They meant well. This wasn't fake. They don't need anything from you. They stopped and took even 25, 30 seconds out of the day to show humanity to you. So see it for what it is. Don't just, I know you're frustrated with the whole situation." Second one is when I talk about, I've gotten over that anxiety of imposing myself on others. Right, wrong, or indifferent, I just can't help myself. And my friend's father passed away. I actually like his brother more than I like him. So I happened to go purposely late to the guy's wake. The reason is there's a lot of people I didn't want to see. Not because I hate anybody. I just don't want to see a lot of these people. Just don't. That's just me. I've moved on. I don't want to I have my own personal reasons. So I get there on the last one. And, you know, I knew the family well enough. And I said to his brother, who was visibly upset, and he passed some comments about how frustrated he was with a few different things about his father's passing and how he was looking to take legal action and all this shit. And I just said, "Let me just grab you for a minute real quick. I just want to tell you something." And I told him the story about one of these people visiting me. And the whole story about it was my uncle. And that was the first, not the first time it happened, but it was the most significant time. And I said, you know, I went back and I told my aunt all these things, and she could not believe that I knew all this stuff. And how did you know it? And you would have never known. And his, when he passed away, where you were said you were sitting with him, that's exactly what he used to tell me heaven would look like for him. So how you picked that out is insane. All these crazy things. And I said, the reason I'm telling you this story is because I know that you're frustrated. You think your father's gone, but your father's not gone. You're going to see your father again. You're going to see your father again. I promise you that, dude. You're never, it's just not over. This is just a part of it. And I'm telling you, I know it's real. And this is proof that I know it's real. How could that have possibly been? So your father, you might think you're never going to see him again. You're going to see him again. And he called me a couple of days later and he said, you know, I just want to thank you for that. That moment changed everything that I felt about my father's passing. Just that moment right there. You just, the only person who stopped and wanted to tell me that. And so those experiences, and dude, by the way, I try to gauge if it's my place. Sure. I just felt like it was a moment. I could see the pain and I didn't think I was coming from a bad place or I know it all and da da da. Like, it's just like, hey man, like, I see you. I see what you're going through. You know, it's going to be all right. Like, you're going to see your old man again, just like I'm going to see my grandmother again, who I miss profoundly, who as a 41-year-old man now recognize that was the best human being I've ever known in my life. I've never known a better human being than my grandmother. And people say, oh, my grandmother's the best. She's fun. She's, dude, I hate to sound crazy, but she was so unique. And the one thing that I'm so proud of her, dude, she would never tolerate anything about talking shit about anybody. She did not like bias. She did not like racism. She didn't want, if you said a joke around her, she would, and she was very funny. She was one of the funniest people in my life. She was like a fucking comedian, dude. She was hysterical. But, you know, if anybody told an off-color joke or something that was like a racist joke, but goofing off, right? You say this with your black friends, your white friends, your Spanish friends, your Asian friends. I could remember her saying, like, I have friends of, and this is a woman who grew up in the, she was born in the 20s, right? 1927. She's like, I have friends that have all different colors and all different ethnicities and religions. And you know what? They're all beautiful. All of them. They're all beautiful. So when I hear things like that, I don't want to hear things like that because I know that they are wonderful people. And that's not how I see things. She was such a saint, bro. I think I told this on the last podcast. I remember my father was getting the cheater boxes for like the cable. Remember those years ago when you get the Spice Channel and shit, right? Like, that's when we first started getting like that in-home porn. It was amazing. Right? If you don't know what it is, because you try to like watch it fuzzy, you could catch it like the Spice Channel, and then Playboy had a channel, right? So my father's like, Ma, you want one of these boxes? And she's like, Jack, I can't steal. Like, I can't, it's against everything that I believe in. But she was funny too. Never cursed, but funny. Oh, Aram is so fun. So as an adult, as I see the world differently, as I was far more imperfect, and I'm not close to perfect, but just had so many more imperfections in my 20s because of my sociology and my influences in my life at that time because of my surroundings. That's why I don't surround myself with a lot of people like that anymore. I see things differently, and I can't undo the things that have been done or the things that I've been said. Just, I'm not that person anymore. I like me who I am now far more than I do who I like, but that was part of my journey. And you know, now looking at her, I'm like, man, this woman was such an example. Wouldn't say if you fucked, I remember like her friend made this, you know, my aunt said it good. She goes, you know, if you cooked and it came out terribly and we were all spitting, grandma would put it in her mouth and be like, oh, it's very good. I could tell you put a lot of time and effort into it. She wouldn't make you feel bad about it. Unless you laughed about it, then she'd be laughing. But, you know, that's the kind of person she was. She wouldn't want to make people feel bad about anything. And, you know, I share those stories with complete transparency and humility because I want people to hear that stuff. And I think it just, when they tune into this podcast, they don't know what they're going to get. And they get a guy like Aram Cho who's been through significant trauma, who's opening himself up to all his business and his life and the things that have happened. And bro, it takes a lot to do that. And like, I want to commend you for being able to do that. And I don't think you could do shit like that when you're 22. I think you got to be a little bit older. And as weird as it sounds, I think the world is making it much more acceptable to be open now.
Yeah, no, I agree. You mentioned you're 41. I'm in my 40s also. And I think there's a certain set of wisdom that comes with age, right? When we were kids, we looked at the most wisest person in our lives is usually our grandfather, right? Or our grandmother. They have that set of wisdom. And I'm not saying we're at that age now, but you know, we're catching up. And if you've lived 40 years on this earth, you've gone through some stuff, and you've made a lot of mistakes. And you're either one of those guys that learned from those mistakes and did something good with it, or you're one of those guys that continually makes those mistakes, right? And we can easily point those people out. So I think that's why if you're one of those guys that realizes with age comes wisdom, I think it's easy to recognize other people that possess that kind of wisdom. I can look at someone right now and go, okay, that guy's the real deal. He's genuine. He doesn't come off with a facade. And then there's people that come off like they don't have a care in the world. They look at life through, rainbow colored lenses and stuff. And I'm like, well, that guy hasn't lived enough life yet. So not no fault of his own, but I kind of gravitate towards the people that I think kind of share the same experiences I do. Some people that have been through it, because I tell my wife's like, oh, he's your people. You know, somebody I can meet today. I actually went off the episode last time. My wife said, how'd it go? I said, oh, Dennis is my people. And you just know that, right? And you don't have to spend 20 years with a guy to know that he's your people. You can tell right off the bat. And in these short hour-long episodes or whatever, the short time people have to listen to these episodes, I'd like to feel that the little bit I've shared, and even though this sounds like a lot, it's really just a little bit. We can do a 24-hour episode and barely scratch the surface. But I'd like to feel that people listening will identify that maybe you and I are their people. And I think the closer, the more we can get people to gravitate towards people like us that have something to say, if they listen, if they'll only listen, it might help some aspect of their lives.
You know, earlier you said something along the lines, and I want to quote you, but probably not verbatim. Life happens. It's very interesting because you're not in control of life, but I just do want to say something about something additional that you said. And again, because we're having a conversation as friends and giving and offering different perspectives, life does happen. Life will not get easier. You can anticipate that there'll be moments of relief and you get to breathe a little bit easier. Don't get too comfortable with those moments because it's not going to be for long. Appreciate the great moments. And for me, some of those great moments are generally moments with my children, moments with my friends and family. Sometimes serene moments of like in New Jersey, we get these like beautiful, perfect summer days where it's like 83 and the wind's blowing. And I like open the windows in my living room and it's just so calm and peaceful that I never want it to end. Sometimes in the winter, I have a room that's my kids' playroom, but it's all windows. And when it's snowing out, it's cool to sit in that room and just really enjoy. Where at night in the summer, when you lift the windows up and the screens are in, but you can, it's warm and then it just really has that hard rainfall with a thunderstorm and all that stuff's really cool. But also you said that your script is written, which I want people to understand that there could be a difference opinion on that. Your script is written. That's great. But don't forget, don't let life happen to you. Go and make life happen. So if you're submitting to this excuse that, well, whatever I do, this is my script, you're never going to fulfill the script that was written for you. Maybe there's a few different scripts. So really think about how you're spending your life. And it's very rewarding to spend it to what you consider to be, at the end of the day, fulfilling. However you want to spend it, that's your business. But don't ignore potential. If you think you can do more, go and do it. If the things that you're doing are detrimental to what you think your potential is, stop those things and try the other stuff. I'll say this. I remember drinking a lot in my 20s. I was a very heavy drinker. And I would be drinking going, by the time I got done in my late 20s, like, fuck am I doing here, right? Like, if I could just stop this bullshit, stop drinking in the way that I'm drinking, I could probably do grab all these good ideas. I could probably change the world. You know, now I'm not that I'm anti-alcohol, but I really don't fuck with it too much. And people always ask, like, what's your problem with alcohol? It literally curbed all my potential for so many years. And it put me way back and behind of where I'm supposed to be. So, you know, we kind of make our own destiny as well. So don't ignore that potential that you have to go do something great. And that potential could be like, you know what, instead of doing this tonight, I'm going to go spend time, quality time with people that I care about. I had a friend of mine who went to prison, very, very unfortunate circumstances. And, you know, for 8 years, I never visited him. And I thought about him this morning and I said to myself, I can't undo that. I've expressed to him the remorse that I have for not visiting him. I was very selfish. I would never do that now. And I still carry a lot of guilt. There was no reason why I couldn't go visit him. And I didn't for 8 years. I barely even bothered. And when he came out, I apologized tremendously. I did everything that I could for him. You know, he forgave me, which is a lot. But I don't think anybody came to visit him. And he wasn't a bad guy. He just did something we all could have fucking found ourselves in. It was one of those situations where he made a bad choice and negligence and recklessness cost him 8 years of his life into a facility. He took somebody's life in a drinking and driving accident. And, you know, all of us could have been there, and you don't got to say how many times you could have been there, but that could have been us at any fucking time. And believe me, the guy just wish he could go back and dial back. He's a great guy. Just, I have to say that to everybody publicly now, like, don't let that pass you. If somebody like that is going through something like that, be there for them. You know, put your bullshit to the side. Put your, find a couple hours, carve it out. I wrote him some letters and I kept in touch, but I should have shown up, man. You know what I mean? And I just kept fucking making excuses. And same thing with somebody who may be dying of a terminal disease. Like, don't wait till they're fucking dead to go visit them. Call them, let them know you care about them. Go visit them while they're alive. Tell them, I can only make one trip to see you. I know you're across the country. I'm going to come now. And tell the family, yeah, look, I don't want to say it in front of him or her, but I wanted to see them alive instead of seeing them in a fucking box. I know they're going to die, but I'd rather come and spend a couple of days with them like this than the other way. I won't be able to make the services. You know, my wife asked me when her cousin recently passed away, she's like, you know, why aren't people coming? Why aren't people coming here? And I go, I wish I had the answer, but all I could tell you is this. What matters is what we can control, and we'll be here every goddamn day. And we were for the last 2 or 3 weeks of her cousin's life. We were there, and I can comfortably say now that I am so thankful that we did that. And I remind her at times, like, hey, she was thankful that you did it too. She's like, no, I know she was. I go, I don't think you know how thankful she was, because in her last 3 or 4 days alive, she could not speak. But I promise you, she probably wouldn't have expected you and I, because it wasn't even her blood cousin, it's her cousin's wife. She probably would have thought we would have been the last people that would have been there with her. And the people that she expected to be there never showed up. But, and I would tell her while she was passing away, we love you. We care about you. Your life mattered. I want you to know that. Say it over and over again to her. Then I'd also say, like, if you can hear us, please show us a sign that I was the favorite family member. Although you never thought, I mean, well, you know, and dude, it's funny because she would like try to move. You could tell she was trying to move, and everybody would laugh and release tension. And
sure,
they don't have to do anything back for me. Right. I know they appreciated that we were there. And that was the most important thing. Dude. It was a very difficult time. And she wasn't even my cousin. She wasn't even my wife's cousin, but she was a human being that we knew and cared about and loved, and her life mattered.
Yeah. You know, you touched on, you wanted to go back to, your life is pre-scripted and pre-written, and, you know, you mentioned choosing your own destiny and stuff. And I don't want people to mistake that, you know, if you're in God, yes, you have opportunities, but those opportunities are open windows, open doors that God's presented. And yes, you have that choice. You know, when I say your life is pre-scripted, I mean, it is. God knows what we're going to do before we do it, but he also gives us free will and that choice. So, you know, if your choice is to not utilize that opportunity God gave you, that's you choosing your destiny. You make these choices because you have one. Why would you have a choice? Because choices were presented in front of you. You didn't create that choice. You didn't create these opportunities, but you can create to take advantage of an opportunity. So yeah, absolutely. Just because you're in a situation where you can easily say you're a victim of circumstance, well, that's your choice. I chose not to be a victim of circumstance, and I chose to jump through the windows and doors that God had presented and opened for me. And that's why I'm here today. That's why you're in the situation you're in. So I don't want people to mistake that when I say that your life is prescripted. Now, I don't want people to think that you're a victim of circumstance. Absolutely not. If you are in Christ, God will open doors for you, but he's got to know your intentions. He's got to know what you want. And that's why prayer is important. You talk about meditation. Well, meditation for me is prayer. Prayer is just a conversation with God. And sometimes I don't even know what I'm praying about. But I sit in the same chair every morning by myself at 3:30 in the morning before I head out to work. Sometimes it lasts a minute. Sometimes it lasts 15 minutes. I don't know what's going to happen until I'm there. But I take those opportunities that get presented in front of me. And sometimes God knows what's in my heart and knows my desires.
And, you know, we're not perfect as human beings. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to make bad calls and bad judgments. I see it all the time. And a real superpower as a human being is to be non-judgmental. And you'd be surprised once you start taking accountability for how judgmental you are. You're like, fuck, I am so fucking judgmental. I mean, here's an example. And I just talked about this with somebody. Look, dude, the fucking thing out of that Laverne, Tennessee, it makes for great memes, right? Like, dude, it makes for great memes. It's a crazy story. I keep going back to
no idea what they were about. I had to Google it. And when I read it, I was just besides myself.
Yeah. But like, there we go. I mean, you want to talk about a superpower of judgment. Very easy to jump on the bandwagon of like, but if you really think about it, could you imagine what that girl's going through? Her life is over on some poor decisions. An impulse, right? Like, and it's funny, right? We can all laugh, but think about the superpower of being like, can we, and I appreciate the memes. People send them to me. They're funny as hell. I'm not saying they're not. You made some poor choices, but you know, for the rest of her life, she's never going to get a break. So those poor decisions that some people make will follow them forever and you can't shake them. And you got to figure out, you know, imagine her sitting there like, I can't believe I did this. I mean, guess what, dude? There are things that I did that I'm just like, or I've done. I'm like, I can't believe I did that either. I'm glad nobody knew. I'm glad nobody found out. Could have been something that could have really wrecked my reputation or whatever it may be. So she got caught.
Yeah.
You know, she got caught. And I'm sure there's some real regret, you know, but everybody's quick to cast judgment about her. I'm not saying there was anything done unintentionally, but, there is a part of me every time I see that I'm like, I feel bad for this girl. She's done forever. And that's really a superpower. And people don't, I want to encourage people to, again, I'm not saying I don't enjoy the memes. I think they're fucking funny. But I can't imagine what it must be like to be her right now. And I should put myself in her shoes and she's got to leave the fucking country. It's no different than, you know, we all supported, Michael Brown and Darren, whatever, what was his last name? I forget.
Yeah, I forget.
It was a long time ago. You took it 8 years ago, right? So I'm sorry if you're listening to that, but you look at a guy like that, like he was subject to a slaughter by the media. And essentially we found out it was a good shoot. Like we all pretty much knew in the beginning and he was cleared and absolved, but his life's ruined. You know, he had to fucking move to a village in Alaska. Darren Brett, no, what's his name? I forget his name. But you know, my point is like, everybody's so quick to cast judgment. You weren't even there. He was judged before he even got on and they wrecked the country over it. Even right now with this thing going on in Memphis, Tennessee, people have asked me, what's your thoughts on it? I didn't see the fucking anything yet. I don't have any reports in front of me. Everybody's ready to cast judgment. The media loves it. So they're really starting up. They got one on the line. That's what bothers me the most. Whatever happened is going to be in today's criminal justice system. No question about it. There is going to be, hopefully, fair and just fairness in the judicial system in this scenario. And unfortunately, maybe there won't be, maybe there will be on either side of the coin. I don't know. But, you know, for the media to start ramping this up, it's the first thing I thought. I'm like, here they go. They're going to fucking ramp this thing up. We don't even know what happened yet. And if they're wrong, I'm telling you, I'll say they're wrong, right? If they're wrong, I'll say like, you know, maybe that could have been acceptable 30, 40 years ago. It's not that way anymore. And if you're wrong, you should have known better. And it is what it is. But to already have these guys fucking crucified, right? We didn't see anything yet. People are already making judgment calls. You already said when we started, they're prepping for the fucking riots that are the media wants it. That's where they're going to sell their biggest space. And it drives me fucking nuts that now all these innocent people, all these cops, all these businesses are going to suffer because the media is going to make a fucking boatload of money on it. And they've been looking for another one for a long time and they got what they've been waiting for. And you're going to see this shit be the next biggest headlines for the next month. And then it's going to fall off, drift away into the ocean of forgotten things. until the next thing comes along, they can make money on it. Makes me fucking nuts. You know, it makes me nuts that that's what they're going to do. A man lost his life. You've got five careers, people charged with murder. You got all this stuff going on, but all these fuckers are worried about is how much money can I make on this? And they're going to pump up all the media to make sure those riots happen. They're going to happen. The riots are going to happen. You know, it's fucked up.
I mean, we're going to have to save this for another episode, hopefully soon after this. But I don't know. It doesn't fit the narrative, though, right? Because the five officers that were fired were African-American. And the suspect or the victim, whichever you're looking at, is also a black guy. So it doesn't fit the narrative. And who's sitting in the White House right now? Democrats. So I don't know. That also doesn't follow their narrative. So it'll be interesting to see what the aftermath is. I know everybody's ramping up for a murder. There's already some intelligence brief talking about online chatter, indicating that things will go that way. I have some information that says to people that saw the video, which, by the way, the time of taping today, it'll be released at 1500 hours Memphis time. So we'll see. I'm going to be at Disneyland with my family today. That's where I'm headed off to right now. So I'm going to be insulated from that a little bit, but it'll be interesting to see what happens.
I guess what, Aaron, just to say this, 99% of the country is going to be insulated from that. Who's going to suffer? People in major metropolitan cities where they're going to, hopefully this time around, you know, protesting is part of the First Amendment rights. Destroying people's shit is not. And that's why we have a judicial system. And let it do its course. So I encourage and I approve for pushing against, things that aren't correct. I'm with that. It doesn't mean you get to burn down Betty's Diner because you're a fucking asshole. And unfortunately, people are going to suffer the most are the ones in liberally ran cities. And hopefully this time they got the back of these cops and they let them do their fucking job and shut this shit down. And also make sure that they don't interrupt peaceful protests, which people have the right to do. And I actually encourage all peacefulness and protests. And I will stand by your side to emphasize that you have the right to protest as long as you're not fucking other people's shit up. So with that being said, brother, dude, it was a blast. We'll have you back.
Sure, man.
Aaron Cho, everybody. Enjoy Disneyland.
Yeah.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.